The Holy Gospel according to Matthew, the 9th and 10th chapters. Glory to you, O Lord. Jesus went about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the good news of the kingdom, and curing every disease and every sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, ask the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest." Then Jesus summoned his 12 disciples and gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to cure every disease and every sickness. These are the names of the 12 apostles. First Simon, also known as Peter, and his brother Andrew, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John, Philip and Bartholomew, Matthew and Thomas and Matthew, the tax collector, James, son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus, Simon the Canaanean, and Judas Iscariot, the one who betrayed him. These 12 Jesus sent out with the following instructions: "Go nowhere among the Gentiles and enter no town of the Samaritans, but rather go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. As you go, proclaim the good news. The kingdom of heaven has come near. Cure the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons. You received without payment, give without payment. Take no gold or silver or copper in your belts, no bag for your journey, or two tunics or sandals or a staff, for laborers deserve their food. Whatever town or village you enter, find out who in it is worthy, and stay there until you leave. As you enter the house, greet it. If the house is worthy, let your peace come upon it, but if it is not worthy, let your peace return to you. If anyone will not welcome you or listen to your words, shake off the dust from your feet as you leave that house or town. Truly, I tell you, it will be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah on the day of judgment than for that town. But see, I am sending you out. I am sending you out like sheep into the midst of wolves. So be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. Beware of them, for they will hand you over to councils and flog you in their synagogues, and you will be dragged before governors and kings because of me as a testimony to them and the Gentiles. When they hand you over, do not worry about how you are to speak or what you are to say, for what you are to say will be given to you at that time. For it is not you who speak, but the Spirit of your Father speaking through you. Now brother will betray brother to death, and father his child, and children will rise against parents and have them put to death, and you will be hated by all because of my name. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. For when they persecute you in one town, flee to the next. For truly I tell you, you will not have gone through all the towns of Israel before the Son of Man comes." The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. Today, Jesus is sending the disciples out on a journey, and they're commanded, take nothing. No gold, no silver, no copper in your belts, no bag, no extra clothes, no sandals, no sword. No, nothing. I've had a number of really wonderful responses to my pastoral letter to Shepherd of the Valley in the past few days on the work of repenting our sin of racism. And I am really grateful to all of you who have reached out and expressed your passion for this kind of work. Because it's clear to me that right now we are being called into a journey together toward what Dr. King called the beloved community. That's clear. We're being called on a journey by Jesus right now. In 1963, Dr. King penned a letter from Birmingham jail, one of the most important pieces of American writing in history. If you haven't read it recently, go read it. It's beautiful. It reads like the prophet Isaiah or Jeremiah. And what's often forgotten about that piece of writing is that it was addressed to white clergy, people who wore collars and crosses and stoles, just like me, whose color of skin was just like mine, and who were all male, actually. It was addressed to clergy because so many white clergy across the country at that time were writing to him while he was in jail, and they were saying, Dr. King, Dr. King, you're moving too fast. We agree with your work. We agree that we want equality for black folks. We agree that racism is a problem, but slow down, man. If you would just slow down, we'll help you. But if you go too fast, you're going to leave us in the dust, and we can't help you then. It's not lost on me that the 50s and 60s are sometimes today thought about like as this golden age in American denominational mainline Christianity, right? We were at the height of our power and influence as a church. I think Shepherd of the Valley was started in 1961 as a part of this kind of growing movement, right? We were growing, we were important. People who wore collars were respectable, upstanding citizens. Now, not so much, but that's okay. I don't really doubt the sincerity of these white clergy who were writing Dr. King. But I am aware that 57 years later, we see evidence around us that they didn't follow through with their promises to do the work. We had 57 years. Many of those years were at the height of our influence. We as a church didn't do it. We had 57 years to transform the white church into the beloved community of God. And yet today, the ELCA, our wider body of Lutheran Christians, we're still one of the least diverse church bodies in the nation. And yet we still hear this voice among people in the church. Slow down. We're moving too fast. We'll get behind you if you just slow down and wait for us. And 57 years later, I just don't believe that anymore. The proof is in the pudding. We've had more than 57 years. We know that the struggle against racism goes beyond when Dr. King penned that letter. It's time for us to get ourselves together and keep our promises to Dr. King. And so today Jesus is sending us on a journey. The harvest is ready, he says, but the laborers are few. So take nothing along. That last part for me is the hardest part about that invitation. Take nothing along. You might have noticed today at the beginning of our worship service that we chanted the Kyrie, right? And a certain version of that Kyrie, we've done it before. And we brought back this one for a reason, because of these words at the end: help, save, comfort, and defend us, gracious Lord. And there's a reason we sing those words: help, save, comfort, and defend. And that's because whenever we try to help, save, comfort, and defend ourselves, things usually turn out badly as human beings. It's like basketball. I'm a terrible basketball player, but I know the wisdom of basketball, right? The best defense is a great offense. And that right there is the problem. When we human beings try to defend ourselves, we almost always end up acting offensively. And I'm not saying we go around offending people. I'm saying we end up hurting people. We become the aggressors. That's the reality of sin. That's the reality of the human condition. More than one person in our church has asked me to make a statement, a public statement, on Black Lives Matter. Well, here it is. Black Lives Matter. I don't mean to be glib, but that's it. That's the statement. We should dive into it, and we will dive into it. But before we do, I just have to ask that we all just kind of Take a deep breath and set our defenses aside so that we can hear what those words actually mean. Not what pundits tell us they mean, not what politicians who are interested in wedge issues want us to hear, but to set down our defenses and to actually hear what they mean. So here goes. But first, help, save, comfort, and defend us, God. We're going to let you do that work, because when we do it, it turns out badly. Black lives matter. That's a statement that emerges out of an examination of evidence. And it's kind of like this. Here at Shepherd of the Valley, I get to see the evidence every day of my value as your pastor, right? As a church, I can look at the budget and I can see the budget line for my salary, make sure I've got health care, right? You all do these wonderful things. Larry Jordan leaves fresh lemons and kumquats and grapefruits on my doorstep in the middle of a pandemic. I get to feel my value. I get to feel that intimately all the time. And some people even go through and dig out clothes for toddlers for my son Elijah and drop off teddy bears and things. That's incredible to me. I know the evidence of my value. I can feel it, and it warms my heart. Now stay with me here, because this is the hard part. George Floyd allegedly committed a crime of using a fake $20 bill to buy cigarettes. And less than an hour later, he was dead. And in the eyes of the man who kneeled on his neck for 9 minutes, that was evidence enough to justify his death. A loss of $20. His life to that man was worth less than $20. That's all it took for four police officers to decide to be judge, jury, and executioner. And our defenses rise up, we might say, whoa, wait, but that's just one couple bad apples, right? You know, that's just one case. But when we let those defenses aside, we see the evidence. And the evidence is that this is not a trend or a fad or a blip in history. This has been happening for years. It happened before King's letter to Birmingham jail, right? The difference is that now we have cameras on our phones where we can see contradicting testimony. It happened before Dr. King, right? Emmett Till was a young black boy from Chicago visiting his family in the South when he made the dumb mistake of whistling at a white woman on the street. Was it a dumb mistake? Yes. But the next day he was dead by lynching. One whistle. That's all it took. That's all the evidence the mob needed as to the value of his life. And over again, we see that this is what it means to be a black child in America, that one action, $20, or a dumb mistake like a whistle, and you're dead. The evidence tells us that there is a low value. If you saw this evidence over and over again as a black man or woman, you probably would get the impression that your life doesn't matter, that you're expendable, that you're easily disposed of at the whims of the powerful. So we speak aloud the words, Black Lives Matter. And I invite you just to think of that first as a statement, not a group. Not a statement that is made because black lives matter more than white lives or brown lives or blue lives. We got to set those defenses down. If we're hung up there, we might not be listening. No one's saying that. We speak the words black lives matter because all of the evidence in this country points to the contrary, that black lives do not matter. The facts just don't show it. $20, one whistle. As we, a congregation, we're a people who sing the liturgy each week in our Kyrie, in our prayers. We have a leg up in kind of understanding what's going on in this statement. And stay with me now, please. Pronouncing the words Black Lives Matter is not very different from the work we do together every Sunday, actually. Each Sunday we get together and we say things to one another like, Lord have mercy, peace be with you. Lutherans, we're in a great place to understand this because we know that God is already merciful. We know that God has already breathed peace in us. We know that God has already redeemed us from sin and death, but we speak those words together each week, Lord have mercy, because hearing them once every 10 years just isn't good enough. Because we know the way that sin and shame pile up on our shoulders every day, every week, every month, and shame of that sin makes us miserable. So we gotta hear those words, Lord have mercy, you are forgiven, over and over again. Each week we speak these words of forgiveness. We etch the sign of the cross on one another's body over and over and over again, because once isn't enough. One of my favorite moments at Shepherd of the Valley as your pastor was like in my third week here. I changed the beginning, the confession of forgiveness, to a thanksgiving for baptism, right? And one member of our church came up to me. You know who you are. And this member came up to me and said, Pastor, why did you take out the confession and forgiveness from worship this week? I need those words every week. That's why I come to church every week, is to hear forgiveness. It's like that. We need to hear and speak aloud these words, Black Lives Matter, so that the next time someone with authority confronts a black man over $20, he knows in his heart of hearts that this man's life is worth more than that. We just have to imprint this on ourselves. Jesus is calling us on a journey. Take nothing along. We're invited to leave our defenses behind. As your pastor, I would beg you to leave behind the defense of the words, all lives matter. Because those words, believe it or not, are heard as harmfully among black and brown siblings as the empty promises that Dr. King heard 57 years ago. They are well-meaning, they are well-intentioned, but they are empty because there's no evidence right now to support that. This is a vulnerable journey we're being called on right now. Jesus says, I'm sending you out like sheep in the midst of wolves. Oh, great. Now you see why it's taken 57 years for us to talk about this, because that's vulnerable. But again, as Lutherans, I have to say, we're well suited for this. We love these words from Romans that we heard today so much that we hear them every Reformation Sunday, because they get to the core of who we are. That's our bread and butter. Paul reminds the Romans that we're not called into this journey with Christ because of our perfection, or because we have the right answers, or because we're going to do it right 100% of the time. No, we hear from Paul that we are justified. We're called into this by God's grace alone. Full stop. We're worthy to be caught up in the journey of God and the work of God now because of the work that God has already done for us. That's our starting point. So from there, actually, it becomes a really fun question. What have we got to lose in setting down our defenses? Ourselves? Great. Jesus tells us to lose ourselves and gain our souls anyway. That's beautiful. I want to leave you with this today, because I imagine as folks who maybe have had these words, all lives matter, in your mouth, or you haven't understood what's going on, that's okay. And I imagine that hearing your pastor say, Black Lives Matter, can maybe induce some shame. And I know the way that shame makes our feet stick to the floor as we're being called out on a journey. So just stay with me now, one more moment. Today we hear, the harvest is plentiful, the laborers are few. That means, people, roll up your sleeves, there's a harvest out there, there's work to do, now get out and work. But later in the gospel, we hear a story about the laborers, a parable that Jesus tells in chapter 20. It's a weird parable, and it's about grace. It's about God's grace to people who showed up late. God's grace for people who didn't keep their promises over the last 50 years. Right? This is a parable. There's a lot of work to do. So the master in the parable has this field that needs to be harvested. The master sends out and invites a crew of workers to come work at 9 a.m. At noon, he looks out, sees that there's more work to do, and he invites even more workers. Then at 5 p.m., it's nearly quitting time, and he invites yet more workers because there's more of a harvest out there. Okay, that's easy. But the crazy part of the parable is what happens next. The people who showed up for the harvest at 9 a.m. receive the same wage as the people who showed up at 5 p.m. Just let that sink in. That's called grace. People of God, it's 5 p.m. in America. The harvest is plentiful. And Jesus is inviting us to become laborers. It's time to drop our defenses and follow him. Because the grace that we know is not a dead end. Jesus is calling on us on a journey and begging us to lay down our defenses. Take nothing along except the grace of God that empowers our love for one another. Love looks like this. Black lives matter. Amen.